I want you to think about the last time you looked for a new job, or, you know, maybe the last time you were actually sitting on the other side of the table trying to hire someone.
Right.
You probably went through all the standard motions, right? Like polishing up this multi-page resume, or if you're the manager, sifting through a massive mountain of them, scanning for recognizable job titles, prestigious company logos, bulleted lists of past responsibilities.
Yeah, usual drill.
Exactly. It just feels like the natural order of the professional world. But we are looking at a stack of courses today that argue this entire process. I mean, the way you are currently looking for your next role, or the way your company is trying to recruit, is just entirely backward.
It really is. It's a profound shift in perspective when you're actually engaged with this material, because the central thesis we are examining suggests that the traditional resume essentially forces both the talent and the employer to drive down the highway while exclusively staring into the rearview mirror.
That is exactly the mission for our deep dive today. We're going to examine the mechanics of what is known as the hidden job market, and we'll be unpacking a radical new framework for hiring that basically aims to dismantle the traditional CV.
Right.
And our source material for this includes the methodology, the user guides, and even the legal frameworks of a Norwegian platform called ByeByee Apply, which was founded by tech veteran Silje Sindal.
And, I think it is important to establish our parameters right away here, because we are not just analyzing a piece of software today.
No, definitely not.
The sources delve really deeply into workplace psychology, the underlying flaws in how traditional human resource management operates, and ultimately the metrics we actually use to measure human potential.
Okay, let's unpack this, because to really understand the framework this platform proposes, we have to look at their diagnosis of the current system. And the sources present a statistic that completely recontextualizes the modern job hunt.
It's a staggering number.
It is 70%. According to this data, 70% of all jobs are never publicly posted. They literally never see the light of a public job board.
Yeah, and that figure fundamentally changes the math for anyone trying to navigate their career. I mean, if you are exclusively relying on public portals like LinkedIn or Indeed, you are fighting with the entire applicant pool for just 30% of the actual opportunities.
Wow.
Right. The methodology argues that the vast majority of roles are filled through whisper networks, internal recommendations, and just direct unprompted outreach.
Which, of course, raises the question of why companies operate in the shadows like that, you know? And the sources suggest it is basically a form of risk mitigation.
Exactly.
Like, publicly posting a job invites this absolute avalanche of generic resumes that HR simply does not have the bandwidth to process effectively. But this creates a massive bottleneck, which the platform identifies as the passive seeker dilemma.
This is such a crucial point.
Yeah, they note that 47% of the workforce is open to new opportunities at any given time, nearly half of all professionals.
Right.
With 0% of those individuals are actively searching.
Because the psychological friction is simply too high. I mean, searching for a job in the traditional sense requires navigating these incredibly rigid portals that demand you compress your entire, complex professional history into standardized bullet points. It
Right.
is exhausting. And for someone who is currently employed but maybe open to a move, it rarely feels worth the effort.
Yeah, the sources describe this reliance on historical formatting, which kind of brings to mind this strange scenario. It feels somewhat analogous to a terrible dating app.
Oh, yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
Like, imagine if you had to use a platform to find a partner, but you were explicitly forbidden from stating what kind of relationship you actually wanted for your future, or even what your current interests are.
Right. You are only permitted to upload a chronological list of your past relationships,
Exactly.
how many months they lasted, and what your specific domestic responsibilities were in each one. And then an algorithm looks at your history of dating introverts and just assumes you only ever want to date introverts, completely ignoring the fact that you might be looking for a totally different dynamic in your next phase of life. I mean, it's a terrible way to predict future compatibility.
What's fascinating here is how that analogy mirrors the core philosophical argument of ByeByee Apply. Because a CV is an inherently backward-looking document. It is a historical ledger.
Yeah.
But human careers span decades, and the methodology argues they should be oriented forward based on an individual's current preferences and their latent potential. The platform's whole premise is that we must stop evaluating people purely on what their job title was yesterday and start assessing them on the working methods they can contribute tomorrow.
Right. And on a conceptual level, that sounds great, but companies still have to make actual hiring decisions. If they throw out the CV and the past job titles, what replaces them? I mean, how do you actually predict if someone is going to be good at the job?
Well, this is where the platform's methodology leans into the hard science of workplace psychology, and it presents a reality check that challenges a lot of standard HR practices.
Okay.
They base their framework heavily on a landmark 1998 meta-analysis conducted by researchers Frank Schmidt and John Hunter. And a meta-analysis in this context means they didn't just run one single experiment.
Right.
They aggregated and analyzed 85 years of existing workplace psychology data.
So they looked at nearly a century of data to figure out what actually correlates with on-the-job success.
Precisely. And their findings are, quite frankly, disruptive to the traditional hiring industry. They concluded that resumes, standard conversational interviews, and even a candidate's level of formal education are remarkably weak predictors of actual job performance.
Wow.
Yeah, and the data also show that generalized personality tests and IQ tests, which have been highly trendy in corporate recruitment recently, frequently fail when applied to complex, modern roles.
Okay, wait, so if the standard toolkit, like resumes, interviews, personality tests, if that is statistically weak, what did the 85 years of data point to as the strongest predictor?
The single strongest predictor was work sample tasks.
Work sample tasks.
Yes. These are not abstract questions about your personal values or, you know, hypothetical brain teasers. They are short, concrete exercises where a candidate actively demonstrates how they handle a realistic work scenario.
Got it. And according to the sources, Bye-Bye Apply utilizes this by measuring what they call the six dimensions of work.
Right.
And to be clear, they are not measuring who you are. They are strictly measuring how you work. Those six dimensions are, let me get this right, prioritization, structure, decision-making, quality of delivery, communication, and learning and adaptation.
It is so critical to note what they intentionally exclude from that list.
Yeah.
They are not attempting to quantify your raw intelligence or your underlying personality or your moral values. They are isolating your operational mechanics. For instance, when you are hit with conflicting demands, what is your framework for sorting them? That is prioritization.
Right.
When you lack complete information but the clock is ticking, how do you proceed? That is decision making.
Let me pause you there, though, and push back on this framework a bit. The sources lean really heavily on these six behavioral dimensions. But let's say a company needs to hire a database administrator. Does it really matter what their learning adaptation score is if they don't actually know SQL?
That's fair.
Right. Doesn't a focus on these abstract working methods completely fail when a company has highly technical, immediate needs?
It is a valid critique, and it requires a nuanced look at what we are actually hiring for.
Yeah.
The methodology does not deny that technical skills are a necessary baseline for certain roles. Obviously, if you need someone to code in Python tomorrow, they need to know Python. However, the argument presented in the sources is that technical skills are increasingly transient. The software you master today may be totally obsolete in 3 years.
But if I am a manager with a crashed system on a Friday afternoon, I don't care about their long-term potential in 3 years. I mean, I need them to fix the database right now.
And if you are hiring a short-term contractor to execute one specific task, you screen entirely for that technical capability. But when a company is making a long-term hire, bringing someone into the core team, the sources argue that making the technical skill the primary predictor of success is a trap.
Okay.
Because the person who knows SQL today but lacks the learning and adaptation dimension to master the next generation of databases, well, they become a liability. The methodology insists that the underlying way someone structures information and solves problems is permanent, whereas technical proficiency is just temporary.
Okay, so it's about separating the baseline filter from the actual predictor of excellence. I get that. But that brings up a mechanical question. The platform measures these dimensions using work sample tasks that only take, what, 5 to 7 minutes?
Yeah, very short.
So how can a 5-minute digital task possibly tell an employer how I am going to handle a massive real-world crisis at the company?
It comes down to separating the noise from the signal. Let's look at how a task testing prioritization might work in practice. You are given a simulated digital inbox on a standard Monday morning, and the system tracks the sequence and logic you use to organize those inputs.
Okay.
Then the parameters suddenly shift.
Yeah.
The simulation introduces an unexpected Thursday afternoon crisis. Mm-hmm. The system isn't grading whether you clicked the right answer, quote unquote. It is analyzing the delta.
Oh, I see.
It is looking at how your organizational framework adapts when the pressure changes. because that underlying mechanical reaction is highly stable across different industries and roles.
Which brings us to how this is actually visualized for the user. Because we are stripping away the resume, we clearly need a new language to communicate this data.
Exactly. The platform replaces the traditional CV document with a visual radar chart. When a user completes their work sample tasks, their operational strengths across those six dimensions are mapped out as a teal-colored polygon on a radar grid.
And when a company wants to hire someone, they don't post a generic job title like senior marketing manager. They define the specific dimensions they need for the tasks at hand, which generates a dashed coral line on that same radar.
Right.
So when you view an opportunity, you are simply looking at the visual overlap between your teal shape and the company's coral shape.
It transforms the entire evaluation from reading a text document to basically interpreting visual alignment.
Yeah. And here's where it gets really interesting. This leads us to a crucial piece of the source material regarding technology. Because we are looking at a platform built in the mid-20s, heavily dealing with data matching, yet the sources are incredibly explicit about what they don't do.
Very explicit.
They state there is absolutely no AI scoring. There is no algorithmic ranking. You will never see a dashboard telling you that you are an 86% match for a role.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture of recruitment technology, that choice is a direct response to the growing danger of black box algorithms.
Right.
In standard automated hiring systems, an AI might decide you are a poor fit based on totally opaque correlations in its training data. Perhaps it notices that historically successful candidates at a firm played golf, so it quietly penalizes you for listing tennis.
And the applicant has no idea that calculation just happened.
Exactly. A hidden algorithm that ranks you is an algorithm you cannot correct or appeal. By completely refusing to use AI to generate match percentages, Bye-Bye Apply ensures the locus of control remains with the human. You see the visual overlap of the radar, and you make the subjective decision about whether it's a fit.
The legal documentation in our sources points out that this architecture makes the platform fully compliant by design with the 2026 EU AI Act.
Right, a huge detail.
Because they don't utilize automated candidate ranking, they sidestep the massive regulatory burden of having to explain an algorithmic black box to European regulators.
They state their position clearly. They have nothing to explain to regulators because they simply do not engage in automated decision making.
Wait, however, they do use AI in this system, just in a heavily restricted capacity. They integrate Anthropic's Claude.
Yes, they do. And for context, Anthropic's Claude is a large language model known specifically in the tech industry for its stringent safety and privacy guardrails.
Right.
The platform uses it not as an evaluator, but as an onboarding coach.
Ah, so you chat with it to help articulate your profile text, identifying what you actually want to do moving forward.
Yeah.
And if you want to speed up the onboarding, you can upload an old PDF of your resume, and Claude will parse the text to extract a bare-bones chronological timeline.
But the privacy mechanism here is vital. Once the AI extracts the timeline, the raw CV file is immediately and permanently deleted. Furthermore, the names of your previous employers are completely scrubbed from the final output.
Because total anonymity is the bedrock of this entire system.
Exactly.
When a company is looking at the talent pool, they do not see your name, your age, your gender, your photograph, or the prestigious logos of the places you used to work. They exclusively see your behavioral dimensions, your verified skills, and your stated future preferences.
This creates a radical shift in the power dynamic. It eliminates the unconscious biases regarding age, gender, or pedigree that inevitably creep into resume screening, and it forces the employer to evaluate the pure potential of the candidate.
The sources even detail how far this anonymity goes. If you choose to make your profile visible to companies on the platform, your data is deliberately blocked from being indexed by search engines like Google.
Wow.
Yeah. So a curious hiring manager cannot copy a unique sentence from your profile, paste it into a search bar, and reverse engineer your identity to find your LinkedIn page.
It is a totally closed loop. You exist in this space purely as an operational asset rather than a collection of demographic and historical data points just waiting to be judged.
But let's look at the practical application for a listener who might be feeling a bit impatient. Having an anonymous, forward-looking profile is great, but waiting for a company's coral line to match your teal radar is still fundamentally a passive strategy.
True.
What if someone wants to actively hack that hidden job market we talked about earlier, that 70% of jobs that are never posted?
Well, the sources provide a highly strategic playbook for exactly that scenario. they outline a method for what they call open applications.
Okay.
And this is not about spamming your resume to generic careers at email addresses. It is a psychological breakdown of how to successfully bypass traditional corporate gatekeeping through unsolicited outreach.
So it's about approaching a company that hasn't even announced they are hiring. And the foundation of this strategy is identifying triggers. You aren't just looking for a company you admire. You're looking for a company undergoing a transition.
Right, because a transition implies an unmet need. Huh. Has the company recently secured a new round of funding? Have they announced an expansion into a new market? Have they recently acquired another firm?
Yeah.
These triggers indicate that internal structures are shifting, and managers are likely facing new problems they haven't yet formalized into a job description.
And once you identify the trigger, the sources emphasize targeting the specific individual who feels the pain of that problem. Sending an open application to an HR department is useless because they only process approved requisitions. You need to find the head of growth or the lead engineer. And if the company is small, under 30 people, the playbook suggests bypassing everyone and going directly to the CEO.
Because at that scale, the CEO is acutely aware of the operational bottlenecks and is almost always the ultimate decision maker on hiring.
The mechanics of the actual method are where most people get it wrong, though. The instinct is to start by talking about yourself, like, I am writing because I am highly motivated to work for your esteemed company.
Which is immediately perceived as a demand for attention.
Right.
The playbook argues that the opening line must be exclusively about them. It should demonstrate that you have analyzed their recent trigger event. For example, noting their recent expansion into a specific city and asking if coordinating logistics across the new locations is becoming a strain on the core team.
You are diagnosing their reality before you ever mention yourself. Then you present your value, not your need. You do not ask them to read a summary of your career. You offer a targeted solution.
Exactly.
You say, I have spent the last several years building the exact CRM frameworks needed to align multi-city sales teams. If you are experiencing those growing pains, I understand that context intimately.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the psychology here, imagine someone walking up to a stranger at a social gathering. A traditional open application is like handing that stranger a 5-page autobiography, stepping back, and asking them to find a way to make you useful to their life.
Right, whereas this strategy is like noticing that the stranger is visibly struggling to fix a complicated piece of machinery, walking up and simply saying, I have the exact tools required to fix that specific model. Would you like me to take a look?
It is entirely different framing. You are not asking for a favor. You are proposing a high-value business transaction.
And the call to action has to reflect that. The playbook stresses creating a low-friction exit. You don't ask for a formal interview. You ask a simple question. Do you have 15 minutes for a brief chat later this week? And critically, the sources insist you follow up exactly once about a week later.
Yes.
If there is no response, you walk away. Applying further pressure just signals desperation and burns the bridge.
The sources also note that for individuals who prefer to build these connections outside of digital cold outreach, they facilitate an offline component called TREF.
Wow.
This is a curated meal networking service where 4 to 6 professionals are matched based on mutual interests and experience levels. It basically serves as an alternative mechanism to penetrate the hidden job market, allowing you to build rapport through shared expertise rather than high-pressure interviews.
So what does this all mean? If we synthesize the meta-analysis from 1998, the anonymous visual matching, and the psychology of the open application, the overarching message from our sources is clear. Whether you are a business leader struggling to find truly capable talent, or a professional trying to navigate your next move without burning out, the traditional mechanisms are failing us.
They absolutely are.
We have to stop filtering human potential through the backward-looking lens of a resume. We need to focus on the stability of how people actually work, their capacity to adapt to new realities, and the tangible value they can inject into a company's immediate future.
Moving away from the CV is undoubtedly a more accurate and equitable way to view human capital, but it does leave us with a fascinating, slightly unsettling question about how we view ourselves. If the methodology we explored today truly takes hold, if we move toward a world where the hiring market is completely anonymous, governed by behavioral dimensions and future capabilities rather than prestigious corporate logos and historical bullet points, how will we define our professional identities? When you are standing at a dinner party and you can no longer lean on the crutch of an impressive job title or the name of a famous former employer to quickly validate your worth to the room, Who are you really in the modern world of work?
Wow, that is a profound thought to leave on. Because when the rearview mirror is finally removed, the only thing left to define you is the direction you are choosing to build toward next.